You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I don't know how to say this. Betelgeuse star?
You're not a child of the 80s. If you were, you would know the film with a similar name. The star is Betelgeuse.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Wire. It's time for our weekly chat with National Party MP Dr. Shane Letty.
As a part of the 100-day plan, the new government has committed to scrapping the Fair Pay Agreement legislation. The legislation allowed collective bargaining between workers in a certain sector and their employers. The goal was to create a set of minimum standards, which would in turn be applied to all workers in the sector, regardless of whether they were union members or not. The new government's plan to repeal the legislation has been met by staunch opposition and marked by the leak of a cabinet memo regarding the legislation's repeal. The cabinet paper revealed that the Treasury had advised the Minister for Workplace Relations and Safety, Brooke Van Velden, that the scrapping of the legislation would disproportionately affect women, young people, and Māori. I spoke to the National Party's Dr. Shane Letty about the plans to scrap the legislation.
Okay, so we're committed to acting really quickly to remove this legislation before any of the fair pay agreements are finalised and the negative impacts we think that will be on the labour market. So it sat in our 100-day plan, and that gave us some urgency.
What was it specifically about the legislation that meant that repealing it was one of the government top priorities? And what were those negative outcomes that you were talking about there?
So look, we're concerned that fair pay agreements remove flexibility in the workplace, flexibility that had improved productivity over the, 20, 30 years in the absence of fair pay agreements. And so we wanted to put that flexibility back into the market. And so we were repealing the fair pay agreement legislation.
In order to trigger a fair pay agreement, 10% or 1,000 employees from a certain sector would have to support the application. Why can't it be trusted that 10% of a workforce is not enough to justify a change in working conditions?
Oh, well, I'd put it back to you as 10% a representative number. Shows the evidence that 10% is a reasonable figure, a reasonable mandate across the workforce to trigger a set of policies that would impact the whole workforce. So how that figure was arrived at and the veracity of that is something that needs to be contested as well.
But that 10% is just to trigger negotiations. A deal has to be met between the two bargaining parties. It wouldn't be binding. So I guess why repeal legislation that is put in place in order to help empower employees to get better working conditions?
Because in fact, what it did was restrict the workplace. It did not lend itself to flexibility. It did not recognise that every workplace is different from workplace to workplace, and that's been part of what New Zealand's success story around productivity and workplace development has been, and this was going to remove that.
Well, we already have some minimum regulations in place, some conditions in place, namely the minimum wage. Do you think that the minimum wage is enough to live on in New Zealand?
Look, the minimum wage is set across a number of terms, and what we do know is that it is challenging with a cost of living crisis at any wage, actually, certainly at those lower and more vulnerable income-earning communities. So this is actually a feature of cost of living as well, which we're addressing in other ways.
Our current minimum wage is incongruous with the living wage, which is set at $26 an hour. Do you think that it's a failing that the wage calculated based on what workers need for basic necessities is over $3 more an hour than our current minimum wage?
I think it's a failing of addressing the cost of living, because a wage that is able to be situated in an environment where one can afford most of the basics of life is a good position to be at. But when the cost of living has pushed out expenses so far, then a large number of wages will struggle.
What are some of the levers that your government's looking at using in order to combat the cost of living then for low-income earners?
Oh, there are a range of tools, and what you'll see in this next few days, you'll see us require the Reserve Bank to focus just on reducing inflation, removing the dual mandate, just as one of the very first things that we're going to do to address inflation, reducing the huge excesses of government where those excesses sit, that is reducing government spending where it's appropriate, is another measure to bring down inflation and cost of living. So there's a range of tools that we're bringing. The first one that you'll see is putting the Reserve Bank back onto a single focus mandate.
Who will repealing fair pay agreements affect the most?
It will affect those workplaces that otherwise were going to be restricted and a one-size-fits-all across all of the country. It will affect those workplaces.
Leaked cabinet papers show that Treasury advised that women, young people and Māori would have benefited the most from fair pay legislation. Is that advice valid? And if yes, then why is it acceptable that these groups lose out on the benefits of fair pay agreements?
Well, I'm not going to talk to any papers that may or may not have made their way into public domain. I can only talk from what I legitimately see as it crosses my desk.
Well, do you think that advice from Treasury is valid, though?
Well, I haven't seen that advice because it was not directed to me, and I won't be commenting on any advice that's been inappropriately leaked into public domain.
That was the National Party's Dr. Shane Lutty.
That was National Party MP Dr. Shane Lutty. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.